Hey, Planet LPers, it's episode 122 of the Planet LP Podcast. I'm Ted Asfergadu. Hope the weight of the world isn't getting you down, but if it is, I think I may have a tonic for troubled times. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire, the dynamic powerhouse soul, funk, jazz, pop group from Chicago that really ruled the airwaves from 1975 to 1983. There was so much music in the landscape going on in those years that it can be easy to overlook or really minimize the band's impact on pop culture at the time. But I'm here to remind you in this episode why they were so great in what I'm calling the Fire Years. With me to discuss the band is a huge fan who can boast she's seen Earth, Wind, and Fire about 25 times. Her name is Elaine Leung. And the two of us used to work together for almost a decade at iHeartMedia in San Francisco. And in all that time, I never knew how much of a fan she was. So that's coming your way after I tell you that Planet LP is sponsored by Steve Fox's Old School, classic soul and R&B, disco and hip-hop, expertly mixed by Chef Steve Fox. And yes, you will hear Earth, Wind, and Fire and so much more. It's the kind of station that'll take you through your day with songs that'll make you smile, dance, and sing along to. Listen at stevefoxoldschool.com. That's stevefoxoldschool.com. Steve Fox's Old School. It's the soundtrack of your next party or your day. Elaine Leung, welcome to the Planet LP Podcast.
Yay, I've made it.
You made it. Yeah. So happy to have you. Elaine and I used to work together at iHeartMedia in their news traffic and weather and sports division called Total Traffic and Weather Network. And we've obviously stayed connected through social media. Interestingly enough, Elaine, it was another former coworker of ours, Michael McGauley, who was the one that told me you might want to get in touch with Elaine because she's like a huge Earth, Wind, and Fire fan. I said, really? He goes, yeah, man, she's seen them like, I don't know, maybe like 25 times or something like that. And I said, this is true. Huh. And I'd been wanting to do an Earth, Wind, and Fire episode for a long time, but I couldn't find anybody. I didn't even know at the time when I was talking with McGauley that the Questlove documentary was coming out. I had no idea. Yeah. It was just something I wanted to do because this was a band that I would say for me meant a lot because mostly my sister, she was 6 years older than I was, but she loved disco. She loved Earth, Wind, and Fire and all those bands from the disco era from like 75 to maybe 80.
It's good, happy, uplifting music.
It is. And I think that like finding a band that you're passionate about, it is a lot like being a sports fan, right? In that you're completely loyal to this group through thick and thin. So how did you become so passionate about Earth, Wind, and Fire? They're like kind of your band, right? One of them, at least?
I would say they're my favorite all-time band. It is true. And I have seen them probably at least 27 times. I'm probably close to maybe almost 30. But you know, in the Earth, Wind, and Fire fandom, I'm just a baby little fan. There are people who have seen them dozens of times, over 100
hundreds of times, maybe,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's pretty common to just talk to folks sitting near you that have seen them quite a bit.
Like, how did you become passionate about them? I mean, what was it? Did you just hear a song and you thought, this is a great song? Or was it something else?
I think what it is, when I was a kid, I really enjoyed listening to the radio. Radio with the FM dial. Yeah. My big brother, Sid, my late brother, he was older than me, went to UC Berkeley, and he was a huge fan, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, of KBLX, The Quiet Storm.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a listener from the beginning when they started. So he was a big fan of Al Green, and there was a lot of Earth, Wind, and Fire playing in the background. Whatever we were doing, hanging out with my big brother, I would hear Earth, Wind, and Fire. So that to me is a connection to part of my childhood. Mm-hmm. There's that. And also when I was in middle school, shout out Presidio Middle School, San Francisco. When I was in middle school, I was so lucky. I got to go to my very first Earth, Wind, and Fire concert when I was probably maybe like 12 or 13. And
awesome.
I think back then I totally didn't like appreciate it in the big picture of things. Mm-hmm. But I got to tag along with my friend's mom and then my friend and a couple other kids. So I got to go, which was rare because my parents usually never let me go to anything. But they thought really highly of Earth, Wind, and Fire. I want to say it was either the Cow Palace or Candlestick. It's a place that no longer exists where I saw them and I was blown away. It was like, how could you not want to dance?
Yeah.
Number one. So it was all like, we're, you know, me and my friends, you know, we're all dancing, you know, middle schoolers having a good time. And then the moms were all dancing. So it was, to me, even noticing back then this span of generations, I was aware of that being that I was on the younger end back then. Mm-hmm. Now I'm kind of like mid-range, I guess. That really was such an inspiration. It was such happy music. It was fantastic. And their shows are just spectacular. It's like a big disco party is what I thought of back then. Everybody was dancing. There was like, I can't remember if there were fireworks maybe. Somebody was on roller skates. It was just so much fun. And then you've got the music, the instrumentals, like you've got the horn section, it was crazy. It was just such a like mind blowing experience. Like it blew my mind.
Was that your first concert that you ever went to? Was it an Earth, Wind, and Fire concert?
My first concert was Joan Jett and the Blackhearts at Great America.
Hey,
when I was 10.
She does a good job. I've seen her live a couple of times and she puts on a show. She puts on a good show.
That was really fun. But this was probably my second concert, my first Earth, Wind, and Fire. So that kind of left an impression on me. And then it was probably not until my older years when I was in high school, going to college, that I, you know, was still into Earth, Wind, and Fire and started to attend concerts because I was working, saving up money so I could go to concerts. And so I had a group of friends from high school, still to this day, and we coordinate and we go to Earth, Wind, and Fire concerts. So I've seen them at Caesar's Palace a few times in Las Vegas, in LA, Reno, Nevada, Lake Tahoe, all over the Bay Area, Saratoga Mountain Winery, one of my favorite venues. Got to see them there. So I'm really blessed.
We're recording this in July and next month in August, they're coming to San Francisco at the Chase Center. So are you going to that concert?
Right. That's right.
Are you going?
I do not have tickets now that I think about it. So I got to work on that.
I'm going to take away your fan card. You're going to get a yellow card because you're going to get a warning. You need to buy tickets and go see them.
My phone is going to blow up now from angry fans.
You're not going to get a red card on this one. You're just going to get a yellow card. Just a caution. Like you need to buy tickets. Yeah. So we're talking about the fire years Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I'm saying this is roughly from 1975 to about 83. This is when the band was, for the most part, churning out hits. Mm-hmm, so this is their most popular era of the band, right? They started, if you watch the documentary, you see them start as sort of a soul jam band with these jazz influences. Yep. And that's because the band leader of Earth, Wind, and Fire, the one who put it together, Maurice White, was for a time a drummer for Chess Records. He was like a session player.
That's right.
And he was also a drummer for the Ramsey Lewis Trio, which is a jazz trio. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting about the documentary was not only what influenced the band, like obviously you can hear the jazz influences, but then later they kind of became this, I don't know, this band that was adrift. They couldn't like change with the times. And when they tried to, it was like, well, what happened to Earth, Wind, and Fire, man? They used to be a hit machine. And then Maurice White kind of shuttered the organization because they put out records, but nobody was buying them as much as they used to. And they just didn't have the hits that they did. So what would you say your favorite album of theirs is? and why, Elaine, and why?
And why? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm wearing this lovely Earth, Wind, and Fire shirt. It's a green with a sort of a mural drawing of all the faces. So this is from their 1971 initial album, Earth, Wind, and Fire, when they first came out. It's a great album. One of my favorite songs on that album is Love is Life. By the way, I would highly recommend this album for anybody who is interested in Earth, Wind, and Fire, and they just don't quite know the very, very, very early, I guess, pre-Fire years. You okay. can really hear, like what you were talking about, that jazz influence. You
absolutely
really hear a lot of the horns. It's just really beautiful. And then there's a lot of drumming. It's also kind of a Brazilian kind of bossa nova going in there. A lot of, like, the sound is kind of like fifth dimension meets deep soul, but it's like in their Earth, Wind, and Fire early ways. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I think they're a product of their times, right? I mean, this is 1973.
Oh, for sure.
So they're so influenced by soul music of the time, which had such a, not all of it, but a good chunk of it, well, the good stuff really, had a lot of jazz influences, right?
Oh, you for just sure. Jazz, a little bit of everything with a little, like I mentioned, bossa nova, the Afro-Cuban. You can really hear that. And it's, you can really appreciate the music because it's not just the instrumentals. It's also the vocals, the harmonies. It's just highly recommended for anybody who's not heard that very, very, very first album.
Yeah, I did that. I mean, I started, like, as I was telling you, that I wanted to do this episode on Earth, Wind, and Fire. So I started going back and listening to the records that I didn't know by starting from the first one. Oh, and I was blown away by what a different band it was. I was just like, holy Moses, this is not what I expected. I think they had two vocalists. They were two different women that kind of like threw me. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait, there are women in Earth, Wind, and Fire that sang like lead?
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
The very, very, very early days.
Yeah. And then they became, well, from 75 to 83, really. And that was their kind of their signature years. It was, like I said, their Fire years. But I kind of interrupted you. You were going to say something else about.
Sorry, my brain is like going exploding. Yeah. So like, it's really hard to pick, but I would have to say that the All in All album from 77 is like, it is fire. I mean, like Serpentine Fire, an amazing song. Like whenever they perform that in concert, everybody goes nuts and everybody's singing along. It's just such a happy, positive vibe. You're just grooving along. And also, of course, Fantasy, which is on All in All. Now, Fantasy, to me, felt like at the time I was a kid, right? And probably not till I was older in college did I really appreciate that song. I feel like Fantasy is a classic song that you can listen to anytime. It's kind of got this like spacey kind of like, woo, positive. Like, I love that. And I feel that for 77, it was in a way kind of a little bit ahead of their time.
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, it's classic. I don't know if that makes any sense again.
Well, yeah, because I kind of dug the, at the time, again, like you, you had an older sibling. My older sibling bought these records because she had her own money because she was 6 years older than me. And she had a job, you know, she worked at Marine Calendars. But hey, you know, it was a job. And so she bought these records and I would just like look at the album cover and was like, this is so cool. It's like Egyptian space stuff.
Yeah. Right? You know, I almost got an Earth, Wind, and Fire tattoo.
Yeah.
I was seriously considering it. And I almost did it, but I didn't. And I think my mom at the time made a comment. So I was like, oh, I better not.
So I think you're right. You're right about Fantasy, that there's a forward kind of feel to it, but it also has a classic sound.
And when Fantasy plays in concert, oh my God, the fans go nuts. And there's this thing. So it's a funny story. So my husband, Wally, knew of Earth, Wind & Fire, listened to Earth, Wind & Fire because of his Aunt Jenny in Chicago. But I guess he hadn't heard the song Fantasy. So he learned about Fantasy listening to the best of, you know, my CDs so he could get ready for the concert. Right. And he was like blown away during the concert because we do this kind of thing where we dance and they go, you know, as one, and we all raise our fingers. That's like a very Earth, Wind & Fire thing. So he was like, what is this? And then he started doing it. So it was pretty, it's pretty fun. It's an Earth, Wind & Fire thing.
So one of the things that on that record, and we should say with it, because it's one of my favorite records of their catalog
as great.
Well. The third track in is called In the Marketplace. It's an interlude, right? And for years, in fact, decades, I never knew what the instrument was being played underneath it.
Oh,
and it turns out it's the kalimba.
Kalimba.
And it was Questlove when he was promoting the documentary. He might have been on Kimmel or Fallon. I can't remember. But he brought out a kalimba that Maurice White had given him. And he started playing it. He goes, well, this is an African instrument. And I'm like, that's the noise I've been hearing. That's the instrument.
Yeah, the kalimba.
I didn't know. So let me play a little piece from the documentary about the use of the kalimba. And this is Maurice White talking a little bit about it.
It kind of inspired me to get a bead on my own African evolution.
I got exposed to the kalimba. Well, I just started fooling around with it.
The kalimba is the thumb piano used by some African poets, storytellers, keepers of history for meaningful connections in the universe.
One night, when I was with Ramsey Lewis, I picked up the kalimba and started to play, and they liked it.
That was like amazing because it brought me closer to knowing more about what I was so curious about, and that was Africa.
And that was Stevie Wonder at the end talking about that. And the thing about that instrument is it not only shows up in that In the Marketplace, but it shows up in a number of Earth, Wind & Fire songs when they really like jamming. There's one, I think they're just jamming. I mean, he's like pulling out the kalimba and he's like jamming on this thing.
It's like electric kalimba.
Yeah. It sounds so great. I think he loved the instrument so much that he has, I think his record label is called Kalimba, or his publishing company is called Kalimba, Maurice White's that is. So I just feel like it's such a powerful but simple instrument that really adds a nice texture and layer to the songs.
Totally cool. So, I want to say that there is usually in their concerts a big feature of the kalimba, you know, in between songs or usually a little bit before the end. Mm-hmm. And Maurice White, you know, rest in peace, he would play that and just, again, fans would just go nuts. And it was just so beautiful and just happy music. It was just really cool. You know, and after Maurice stopped performing, I want to say it was around 96 or so, Philip Bailey does a big kind of like solo with the kalimba.
Oh, really? So he picked it up himself. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's part of the show. So I'd, if anybody ever has a chance to go, check it out because it's just amazing. It's like you said, it's a very simple instrument, but it just is so cool.
It works really well with their songs. And you're right about it always being that their songs are so positive. And just coming back to the documentary, which is on HBO, and I just keep calling it the documentary, but it has this odd title called Earth, Wind & Fire, To Be Celestial versus That's the Weight of the World, which is like, huh, okay. Questlove said the reason why he did that title was kind of a nod to the Rocky and Bullwinkle show because he says, if you ever watched that cartoon growing up as a kid, the announcer would always say something like, tune in next week when, and he would say these two titles, right? You know, Bullwinkle, blah, 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 or da, 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 da. You know? It's kind of an odd little nod. He's a Gen Xer. That's who he is. And he grew up in a certain time. Yeah.
Well, will Burroughs's dastardly scheme really succeed? We'll find out next time in Clause and Effect, or You'll Be Sorry.
So what's your takeaway on the documentary? What did you think of it?
You know, I like anything Earth, Wind & Fire. Well, it was kind of interesting because it was kind of like a little bit of a deep dive on Maurice White. And I think that we know him as the singer, the performer, the founder of Earth, Wind & Fire. But, you know, he's human too. And just to see some of the struggles he had, like his childhood, I never knew that. You know, as a
I didn't either.
I never knew that. It just broke my heart to see. I mean, I got a little teary during the documentary.
I mean, he was basically abandoned by his mom for years.
Yeah. You know,
and she moved up to Chicago and leaving him. And
neighbor lady, I guess, took him in.
Yeah. So for a young boy who goes through that kind of trauma and then feels like an outsider, like he never really fully belonged, I was just taken by the fact that Earth, Wind & Fire's music is so positive all the time. Like it's always, it's never really a downer.
You know, there's a lot of music out there that's downer music, but they are definitely the opposite of it. I mean, you know, I think maybe, you know, when we watch the documentary, you see, and you kind of like can visualize that he had some struggles, you know, relating to that. And even that, you know, people who were interviewed in the documentary, you know, one of his partners, said basically it was like his inner struggle to, you know, and dealing with abandonment that he always wanted to do things better, bigger, or finding the metaphysical. So that's kind of like a thing with Earth, Wind & Fire. You see the, you know, the Egyptian character and everything. So very spiritual in that kind of like higher being. So in a way, I think to overcome and grow from where he came from is to search for this positivity and light. And like when you listen to their songs, a lot of their songs, I want to say most of them, I could be incorrect, but there are no pronouns per se. So you wouldn't say she or her or girl this, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's to be inclusive. And I think that's part of their whole vibe of inclusivity and, you know, a higher power and just feel good and just spirituality. Yeah.
I think like the song Shining Star is a great example of that.
Oh my God. Because, I love that song.
Right. Because it's not talking about a specific person. It's saying you're a shining star, right? It's everybody. It just radiates this kind of, and I'm going to repeat myself, but positivity that is often lacking in a lot of popular music. It's not to say that the love
especially
songs.
Especially nowadays.
Well, let's think about love songs in general, right?
It's a different kind of love song than like, let's say Machine Gun Kelly. It's like definitely different. Like, lyrics wise and everything, but maybe this was his outlet to kind of grow from what he dealt with as a child.
He could have taken the other path, which is to be affected by that trauma to the point where it's crippling you. Instead, he took it in another direction and said, no, like you said, it's a very metaphysical band in terms of their content about what they write about, the kind of how they present themselves, the type of music they do. It has sort of both futuristic vibes and classical feel. And there's a lot you can tell every one of these players can play really well. So, you know, you're getting a lot of quality. It's not just somebody trying to figure out their instrument. No, they're absolutely accomplished. And the vocals and just everything that kind of comes together, it kind of hits you on a level that I think it's tough to articulate sometimes. Like you were saying that when you go to the concerts, you have a dance that you do as one, right? And you put your finger up as one. But that's the thing, right? It's the thing that binds you all together. And it's just that feeling. Like you're looking around, everyone seems to be having fun. They're dancing. They're just like feeling it. When I listen to their songs, they make me feel good. You know, it just
exactly. It's a really good time when you listen to their music. It really it really is. And you're talking about vocals. Talk about vocals. Philip Bailey.
Yeah.
It's like fine wine. His voice gets better every year. And just can hit those notes like reasons. Oh my goodness. It's like chills. And it's quiet throughout the stadium.
Speaking of reasons, he did say in the documentary, he says, I'm going to ruin this song for everybody who thought it was a love song.
I know.
But it's not.
I know. I was like, I knew that, you know, later as an older person, yeah. But, you know, but I remember they played that at my middle school dance, which I guess was kind of controversial. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to slow dance. You know, you do the awkward slow dance where you're like 3 feet away with your arms out.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like who knew it was about that? Because you think reasons that we're here and you're like, okay, oh, it means something totally different.
No, but it was kind of a one night stand. That was what it was. And then the woman wanted to go back to her husband. He's like, wait,
and she was on the phone calling him.
Yeah, on the phone. And he's like, sorry, I ruined the song for everybody. When he said that, I said, yeah. And I'm talking to the TV because, you know, I'm just all into it. I'm like, yeah, but it's a beautiful song. The way you sing it. It's so gorgeous. You know, it's
but it's true. How many weddings have you gone to where they've played that song?
Exactly. Let me play another clip from the documentary. And this is Stevie Wonder is in this. And he's talking about the song Shining Star, because this was really the song that kind of kicked off the fire years. I mean, from the album That's the Way of the World, which was also a soundtrack to a movie. But it's kind of interesting to hear this. I'll just play it and you'll hear what I think, well, I hope, is interesting to you.
The arrangements were amazing. I just loved the way it sounded. And so at some point, I was, inspired by what it did.
Jesus Christ. So you're singing I Wish was inspired by Shining Star?
It was. That was definitely an influence, hearing that song.
Wow, I'm mind blown. I didn't see that coming.
I don't think any of us saw that one coming. Questlove gets in there and says, wait a minute. Shining Star inspired I Wish? Yeah, it did. It's like, okay.
Wow.
So, I mean, that song was so powerful, even to somebody like a Stevie Wonder, who certainly a iconic status at that point in his career. Everybody was like, oh yeah, Stevie Wonder, he's great. And he's getting inspiration from Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, like this song. And he's like, man, this is good. And it gets him to write a hit song for himself. So it's really kind of interesting.
I mean, if you think about it, anybody who listens to their music, it's so uplifting and it's like inspiring. So it's no surprise. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was a surprise, but that's kind of cool. It really is.
So did watching this documentary change anything about your love of the band that you can think of?
I still love Earth, Wind, and Fire. I'm still going to go to concerts.
So that didn't change.
That did not change. But I have to say that I did not know this whole background with Maurice and his childhood. I mean, that just kind of really tugs at the heartstrings. And now I kind of think that when I listen to these songs, I will think about that in the background. You know, like how someone who had such hardship overcame that and chose to write such positive songs and inspirational songs. So,
and enduring. I mean, these songs don't really go away because they're that good.
Oh my goodness. Like going to the concerts, you see great grandparents to great grandchildren. It's crazy.
That's
cool. And they're all dancing regardless of the age. And we're all high-fiving each other. It's just really fun.
It's a good community, it sounds like. Yeah.
So it has not changed my view. Although I do have to say that this has really put a little more perspective on how I felt about Maurice White. You know, there were parts of it also in the documentary that was surprising to hear Philip Bailey say, we had those hits, but that's not my favorite album because we weren't involved creatively.
Yeah.
So that was surprising.
That was the record that David Foster was brought in on.
Yeah.
That would have been 1979's I Am. That one had hits, obviously. I mean, it sold like crazy, you know. There's got After the Love Is Gone is on that, Boogie Wonderland, In the Stone. So there's some great songs on there, but it does sound like a different band in a way, because David Foster, his production and mostly working with Maurice White, it sort of sidelined a lot of that signature sound. And I could see why the bitterness would start to bubble up, because it's like, man, we built something here that's really like, this is us. This is our voices coming out. And now you bring in this guy who's going to basically kind of elevate your voice, but do so through a lens of a softer feel. It just didn't quite have that punch.
That was kind of a surprising to see that. I did not know that as an Earth, Wind & Fire fan, that they felt that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
During that time. Yeah.
Being in a band can be really hard, especially a big one like that, where you have so many people that you're trying to.
And then also you have to consider that the time the band must have felt crappy. They weren't considered to help writing. I mean, Maurice, he did found the band, and
yeah.
I just wish there was a little more involvement. Like, I did not know that. I mean, it's their sound, their voices, and some of the instruments are a bit dialed back, or the instruments are a bit different, or it's a little more.
It has a polish to it. Just feels a little tame.
More times, almost like poppy, almost.
Yes.
If that's the correct way of saying it. Poppy.
Yeah,
soul.
They pivoted away poppy from soul. The soul to the pop stuff. You know, they was like, we need big hits now, you know, we need to dominate contemporary hit radio or something, you know, just sell singles. I know you mentioned this earlier in our conversation about the album that you thought people should start with, but to the uninitiated who's never heard Earth, Wind & Fire before, if you were to sit down and say, for the uninitiated, you need to listen to this record, would it be All in All, or would you go to another one?
Ooh, that's a good question for someone who's uninitiated.
Yeah.
I would probably recommend That's the Way of the World.
Uh-huh.
And then following that, All in All, I would say.
Okay. Excellent choices. I think so.
But I don't know. Maybe I'm biased.
Well, that's fine. I think we all are. You know, when it comes to our favorite musical bands, we've all got our favorites in terms of albums and so forth. So I've never seen this band live at all. I've only seen.
You've got to go. Ted, what are you doing?
I don't know. What am I doing? I'm talking about them.
You're going to love
it. Clearly, I love the music. I should just get the money.
You'll be dancing, and it's just like you will feel the emotions going through the concert, and just especially having watched this documentary, I think in a way you appreciate the music more, but you would love it. There's a lot of kalimba in there.
I like that.
And kalimba. Like Philip Bailey's voice again, like fine wine.
It's held up through the years. So he's
my God.
Caribbean.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
In the documentary, they showed like some of their, when they really kind of had a big old budget to do these amazing shows, like a lot of pyrotechnics and smoke, and they had spaceships and things like that. Kind of like George Clinton's Parliament Funkadelic or Kiss, you know, that was just bombastic. It was just like over the top.
Theatrical in a way.
And they lost money on these tours because it was so expensive to do these things. I see why, because you have to do this every night on the tour, and if you're booked around North America, you're going to go broke because that's a lot of money to dole out every night, and the ticket sales don't make up for it as you would hope they will. But I looked at that part because they featured that in the documentary. But what's their show like now? I mean, you've seen them more recently. Is it still pretty like over the top? Do they do a lot of smoke and pyrotechnics?
No, there's no smoke or pyrotechnics. So I mean, maybe there might be at the end, but generally speaking, no. It's just a focus on the instruments, the songs, the singing. There's a lot of dancing. There is a little bit of like costume changing, and depending on the show, I have seen, I'd say within the last 5 to 10 years, they've brought out like roller skaters in the background, you know, for like sing a song or a few other tracks. I mean, little things like that, but nothing over the top. No, like tubes descending with like, you know, Philip Bailey in the middle, Maurice and you know, there's none of that. So I would say it's a little more less theatrical, but
and
it's
just more,
so
more musical.
So full of music. I mean, there's so much music in it. There's guitar, there's the horn section, there's not just horn, there's a saxophone, there's the trumpets. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, you get to see a little bit of everything there.
This will be a difficult question to answer because it's easy to ask, but sometimes it really puts you up against a wall and thinking like, well, what is it? What's your favorite song by them?
Oh my God.
And what makes this song so good to you?
Oh, it's so hard. It, you know, it depends. music, I feel at least, music, you relate to it because it's a time of your life, or
yeah,
maybe you're going through like a special event, or you know, you just started your career, something like that. So I think for me, I've got different songs in general, but I think if I had to pick an overall favorite song, I think it would be September. Mm. And I know there are many, many, many other tracks. The reason why for me, I pick September is because it reminds me of my younger years and hearing the song and just dancing in the living room and being with my brother. It's a very special memory for me. And that's why when I hear September, I always think about my brother and being a kid, you know, dancing around. And he was older than me. So he had just graduated Berkeley and I was a little kid and he was a martial artist. So he did Kung Fu and a few other things. So he used to grab me by my hand and my foot and he would just twirl me around and I would say, faster, faster, faster. And I remember September playing and you know how you're going around in a circle.
Yeah.
You kind of hear it go, left, right, as you were spinning around. And then he would just let go and I would hit the couch. And we just laugh so hard because it's so, so fun. And I just have that connection to that.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I mean, lovely.
There was one time my brother did miss and I kind of hit the wall above the couch.
I was going to say, was he always spot on with the couch? But apparently no.
Except for that one time when I fell on the floor and my mom came in like, what is going on? And we all got in trouble. So no Bugs Money for you that Saturday.
Right. For me, it's Serpentine Fire.
I love that song
because it's, I was telling my brother, Steve, you know, my brother, Steve, we were talking about these songs situated within the era of disco, like All in All comes out at the height of disco, really 1977. Yeah. And I said, if you listen to Serpentine Fire, it's not a disco song, but you can dance to it.
Oh,
I said, because disco has that kind of, you know, keeps that beat constantly like this because it's easy for everybody to find where the one is or where the two is or whatever, and jump off right in. I said, but this song, it's a little different because you've got the sort of bum, 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 like that. And I'm all like, that's not a disco beat, but you can dance to this song, right?
Totally.
But it's got such a great vibe to it too. I just love the explosion that comes.
Oh yeah. It's great.
With the horns and just,
oh my God.
Vocals. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. So Ted, when you go to the concert, I want a full report on what you think about Serpentine Fire during the concert.
Who knows, Elaine, we might see each other there. It's possible.
Going to their concerts, it's life-changing. I really say so because it's so inspirational and you leave with such, you know, such a great vibe and great feeling. And it's an era of music where it's love and happiness. And, you know, it's not like some of the music today can be a little bit of a downer type theme, but this is just pure happiness, you know, love. And it's a good vibe.
It is a good vibe. Mm-hmm. Let's end on that note. It's a good vibe. And I've really enjoyed this conversation,
Wind,
Elaine. Thanks so much for being on the Planet LP podcast. Really, seriously.
Yay, I've made it.
You did. You finally got on the pod.
I better buy a lotto ticket.
Maybe I can get 10% of your winnings.
We'll see.
Oh, dang. All right. Elaine, again, thanks for being on the pod.
Thank you. See you at the concert.
Well, that was fun. Elaine was a good sport and has really made me want to see Earth, Wind, and Fire live. Hey, maybe it'll inspire you to see them on tour as well. They are on tour with Lionel Richie. Not a bad combo. Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks as always for listening. I'm Ted Astrogatu, and I'll be back with another episode of the Planet LP podcast very soon.